Lecture 3. The third lecture is on analyzing business decision processes. A decision process is a sequence of actions and tasks and various kinds of actions that are taken by one or more people to accomplish a piece of work related to decision making. So it may be preparing the bid sheet and cost estimation. It may be developing an analysis of sales as part of some kind of performance monitoring. But there's a specific task and we see a specific process. The general guideline that I want to give you is the first thing you should do is identify the business decision process. So in terms of building a single family home and doing a cost estimate for that, you want to try to figure out what would happen when a prospective home builder, somebody who wants a new home built, calls a builder and says, "Can you come out and give me an estimate for building a home?" What will happen when the decision process gets initiated to get a bid? So I'm a person who wants a new home built. I call up a builder and I say, "Please come out and give me an estimate." That initiates a process in the company to prepare a bid. Once the builder goes through all of the steps, their analyses, and they come up with a bid price, then a new decision process gets an increment. And that's the potential home builder gets a price and then they have to choose among them. You're just looking at the decision process in the company that's proposing to build this new home. Okay? But oftentimes decision processes are interrelated and by different stakeholders. So we're looking in this example at one stakeholder, a company that builds new homes. Once we've identified the decision process, then we can figure out what kind of decision support system to build, and we can design it. So keep that in mind. Start with a good understanding of how the decision is made and should be made, and then we can prescribe computerized interventions for the process. Decision making is the most important part of the manager's job. Managers make all sorts of decisions every day. We need to figure out what decisions a manager is making and when a process begins or gets initiated and when it ends. Not all processes are real discrete. Some are fuzzier. The more structured the process, the more likely it is that we'll be able to see a clear beginning and a clear end. The as-is system, whether it's computerized or not, is our starting point, like any systems analysis task. Decision-making is an especially difficult process because of the dynamics and the fact that we may have multiple people involved using multiple technologies, and some decision processes extend over months. They don't all happen in 20 minutes. So decision processes are a variable length, and the beginning and the end and the tasks are not always easy to identify. And we need to keep in mind that in an organization, there are lots of decision makers making lots of different decisions. We don't need to support them all. We need to figure out which decisions need support and which ones we can support effectively and which ones, if we support them, managers will want to use the decision support. So we make choices when we do decision process audits, as you'll see in the next lecture for Chapter 4. Chapter 3 in the Decision Support Systems book talks about managerial decisions at four levels: strategic planning, management control, operational control, and operational performance. If you look at slide 3, you'll see some examples of decisions for strategic planning, allocating resources, establishing policies. For management control, you see things like introducing new products or R&D expenditures. The decisions are much less structured at the strategic planning and the management control level. At the management control level, one of the common tasks that we build decision support for is performance monitoring. And then we do a lot of special studies to support both the strategic planning and the management control level. Many of the decision support systems we build are associated with operational control and operational performance. Operational performance means that we provide decision support during the actual process of making those operating decisions. So for example, routing an emergency vehicle in a 911 center, or helping a truck dispatcher dispatch trucks, or helping a customer return specialist at Walmart decide whether or not they want to accept the return and identify if fraud might be happening. Those are all operational performance decisions made by various managers in the organization that we can support with computerized decision support. At the operational control level, we're looking at operational performance and we're trying to aggregate it over time. So it's more of a meta view of decision making in the organization, and the decision support we create is more aggregated. So we might want to look at store performance for the past day or the past week and provide that information on sales for the dry goods department for a buyer down in Bentonville, Arkansas, so that they can see what kind of category management they need to do in terms of purchasing items for dry goods in Walmart stores in their region or across the country. That's more the operational control level of decision support. If you look at the triangle on slide 5, you'll see the hierarchy. Decision making is generally viewed as a hierarchy, even though today organizations are flattening and we have more of a network decision making model. But the hierarchy model on slide 5 suggests that operational performance decisions are made by managers and staff at lower levels in the organization. Some are made by a customer service representative, and then perhaps a customer service manager has override type of power to make exceptions. The type of DSS that's used at each level changes. One thing that we're trying to do now at the operational performance level is more real-time decision support, where we provide data about the customer or about the action that we're contemplating, like where a truck is or an emergency vehicle is and where an emergency is, so that we can pair up an emergency vehicle and a situation that needs attention in a dispatch center. When we get to the strategic planning level, we're trying to look more at perhaps models for forecasting or resource allocation models that involve optimization. So the kind of decision support may get more model-oriented as we move up the organization because we're trying to anticipate the future. As I said, at the operational and management control level, we do a lot of performance monitoring. So we use data-driven DSS in the mid-levels of the organization and then maybe aggregate it monthly for the strategic planning level. It's very important that you understand that every problem that occurs in an organization is not good for building a decision support system. There are two dimensions that I want you to make sure you understand, and one is problem type, where we have a continuum from very structured or well-structured problems to unstructured problems. The structured problems are ones that we can describe using numbers and where we can set objectives that are quantified. In an ideal situation, we have a computational technique like linear programming or an algebraic model that we can apply to that model of the situation. So in a very structured situation, everything is known. We understand what our objectives are and we can quantify them. When it's unstructured, the objectives are hard to quantify, they may be qualitative, hard to measure, and we can't model the situation. So we need more subjectivity. And then we look at these situations as being either very routine, and decision support systems are best when the decision is repeated, so routine or recurring, versus non-routine, that is, they only occur once or very infrequently, perhaps once a year or once every few years. And the situation may change in the non-routine situation. Again, it's a continuum. Now this word programmed for routine and recurring decisions tells you something about what we do there. If you look in the picture on slide 8, you'll see the green box. That's the intersection of very well-structured situations that are routine and recurring. So they're very well-structured, they're routine and recurring. We program those decisions if we can. That is the realm of decision automation. We automate using business rules and computer programs those decisions if we can, because we gain economies by routinizing those decisions. So it may be inventory replenishment decisions or approval of credit cards or other decisions where we think the computer can make a more consistent, faster, equally good decision as a human decision maker. And sometimes the decisions are better. Now, you'll see overlap there. Just because a situation could be programmed doesn't mean that we program it. It may be too costly to program it, or we may decide, for whatever reason, we want to keep a human decision maker involved. So right in the middle, you've got a very big oval in the figure on slide 8. That's the realm of computerized decision support systems. Computerized decision support systems can help in structured and even some unstructured situations. And they can help in situations that are at least recurring, but it doesn't have to be every minute or every day or every week. Because we invest so much in the user interface, we need some repetition of the decision situation if we're going to develop the computerized decision support system. The final circle that you see there is down in the bottom right-hand corner. Now that's the domain of very unstructured situations that are non-routine. Perhaps one-time only situations. And the computerized support that we provide there may still be with an Excel spreadsheet or doing data mining in a large database or some kind of a simulation model. But it's a special study. Usually an expert puts that together and they prepare a report. They may show the model to managers, but it's a very different kind of computerized decision support to have a special study. Are there any questions about how these three types of computerized support fit in to the two dimensions? Routine, non-routine, structured, and unstructured. Are we in good shape on that? Okay. So the situations where we use decision automation, decision support systems, and special studies differ. Is there some choice there? Yes. But you wouldn't do a special study for something that was routine and recurring, because that means we do that special study again and again and again. And we wouldn't automate a situation that was non-routine and unstructured because we wouldn't be able to quantify the model and we wouldn't have numerical objectives, which we need to automate. All right, let's move on then, since that seems to be pretty clear. So we've got a whole host of situations based on those two dimensions of how structured the situation is and how frequently it's happening. When we look at a situation, there are other factors we want to consider to help us choose whether or not we build a computerized decision support system. We want to build decision support systems when that situation, which has some structure, we call it semi-structured, and it's recurring, is characterized by complexity, because computers help us with complexity. So complexity makes it hard for a human decision maker to make the decision unaided, so we look to the computer to help. Where there's risk and uncertainty, again, the computer can help us calculate the risk that's involved, and we have difficulty assessing risk in situations. If there are multiple stakeholders, we need to think about using the computer because it can help us systematically involve multiple stakeholders. We can collaborate using information technologies when we can't meet face-to-face. If we could meet face-to-face, it may be that we can have a decision-making meeting and do it. And in the IBM credit example, you'll see that they tended to take what were routine decisions and have a lot of decision-making meetings. That's high cost, but you can do that. You can treat situations that could be supported with computerized decision support as a group decision, as a recurring special study. It's just expensive. And then if there's a large amount of data, computers are great for crunching numbers. Keeping large data stores, giving us access to them, letting us query those databases, letting us summarize the data. So if we have a large amount of information, especially internal company data, we may decide that some kind of computerized decision support system helps us to get that data and analyze it. The last situation, especially at the operational performance level, is important. If information is changing rapidly, somehow that change in information needs to get to the decision makers quickly and in a form that they can apply to make the decisions that are affected. So imagine a stock trader. We have a lot of computerized decision support for people who are trading stocks, especially if they're day traders, because the market's very volatile and they need current information and they need to do things like set triggers on when they're going to buy and sell. They need to be able to quickly go to market information and have news information and all sorts of other things. So we have elaborate decision support, both data and documents in terms of news releases and even video today. So rapid change in information suggests that computerized decision support is important to stay on top of the situation. Let's move on to slide 10. Part of building a computerized decision support system is to analyze the process. But decision processes don't exist in a vacuum. So we have to understand the context of the process. Context means everything that's around the process. So we need to look at how the context impacts the situation, and we need to look at the elements of the situation. So one of the factors that the chapter describes that you should look at is the goals. What are we trying to accomplish when we make decisions in that situation? We need to understand that if we want the computerized decision support to help us attain those goals. So we need to understand what the decision process is trying to help us accomplish. We need to see what choices are available to decision makers in the situation. We need to see how an ideal decision maker would evaluate the information, decide if there's a discrepancy, if one choice is better than another, but we need to understand how a manager is supposed to process the information that we give them for decision making. And then the environment. Both the external environment, for example, stocks, what's happening in the economy? Has the Fed just lowered the interest rates? And then the internal environment in the organization. Are there limits on how much a trader can put at risk for the organization? Some of you may have heard about the big scandal at Société Générale. A rogue trader was able to basically rack up $9 billion in losses for a big French investment and insurance company, Société Générale, by understanding the computerized systems and putting big risk trades into the market. $9 billion because the computerized systems were able to be circumvented. And all the controls that the firm had were basically not able to keep that person from making bad decisions. And that's what they did. That person was able to make bets that they lost, which cost the company a lot of money. Good computerized decision support should keep that from happening. Clearly, Société Générale did not have good computerized decision support. And then we need to look at who the decision makers are and what kind of role they want to have, what kind of a user of the system. Do they really want a system that somebody else uses and generates reports for them, or are they going to be a hands-on user of the system, or maybe actually do drill down or manipulate parts of the system? Whenever we look at the decision makers, we want to keep in mind what their abilities are, because we know that not everybody is an equally good decision maker, and some people have more experience than others. The way our decision support system presents information is going to influence the choices they make, and we need to have an understanding of our potential user. Well, so we look at the elements of the situation and the context in which that process is going to occur. The decision makers are very important. Who is it that we're supporting? Who's our target user? We need to understand the purpose of the system, but we also need to understand who the target or intended users are of the decision support system. The scope of the decision determines who should make the decisions. The broader the scope in terms of the impact on the organization, the higher the level we should place it. No low-level trader should be able to put a large banking concern at risk for $40 billion of bets that they've placed in the market. That shouldn't be possible. And we realize that managers have limitations, and our system should be helping us identify problems with decision making, especially at the operational performance level. If we see that there are problems there in our controls levels, we should do something about them. You can't control operational performance unless you measure it and make that available to a manager at the operational control or management control level. We have to have decision support at multiple levels that evaluates what's happening at the lowest decision level in the organization. There's very good evidence that managers tend to use simplistic strategies. They don't take lots of information into account. A good decision support system is going to help avoid simplistic strategies and provide managers with the right amount of information without overloading them, because we don't want to do that either. A decision support system should provide the right information, not too much information. Managers do tend to request excessive information, and some managers base decisions on how it will make them look. It's been suggested that that rogue trader was basically trying to cover up mistakes he'd made by making increasingly riskier bets. We see that in gambling all the time. You lose some money, so you start making riskier bets to try to win it back. In organizations, good computerized decision support shouldn't let that happen when people are putting assets of stockholders at risk. All right, let's move on to slide 12. As I said, I want to try to get done in a timely way today. So I'm going to just quickly suggest that you look at Herbert Simon's classic model. Simon won a Nobel Prize for his research in economics and decision making, especially organizational decision making. And he suggests that decision making is a sequential process with some steps. And some of those steps are easier for us to support than others. The chapter talks a little bit about what a system is, and what we have to do is put a boundary around the process and then a boundary around what we want to include in our decision support system. A decision support system doesn't necessarily support the whole process. The decision support system may only support one or more steps in the process. So when we identify a system, we have to identify the boundary, and there may be subsystems. We can build an integrated decision support system that may have subsystems of multiple types. So we may build a DSS that has a data-driven subsystem and a model-driven subsystem. That adds to the complexity of understanding all of this, because you know that systems can be complex with multiple subsystems, and that's true for both the real-world systems and the decision support systems we build. The IBM Credit Corporation business decision process is a very interesting one. It's also discussed in the Ask Dan column, what is an example of a business decision process, and I recommend that you read that. It also goes over the college admission process in more selective universities, where they do a lot of processing of applications and test scores and maybe even interview data. Some universities have routinized admissions. If you have this score on the ACT and this high school standing and this GPA, you're automatically admitted. But there's some decision processes for admission to college that are very complex. So read that example, review Chapter 3, and look at the examples of business decision processes. The IBM Credit one is an interesting one, because we're able to see how a decision process that extended for 6 days and sometimes 2 weeks could, through reengineering, be shortened to just 4 hours. And it talks about, in the Hammer and Champy book, how managers actually walked through a loan request to see how long it really took. And they were amazed at how short it could take to process these loan requests. So the step-by-step process described in your book has 5 steps. We get a request for funding. That used to be called into a boiler room where managers would be filling out a paper form, all the way down to a clerical group that converts the paper documents into a quote letter, and they send it out by FedEx. You can imagine that if we reduce the decision cycle time to 4 hours, we will get more loans from our customers than if it takes 2 weeks. People don't like to wait to find out if their loan is approved. And financing for IBM Credit was a source of revenue. They made a lot of money on financing that computer equipment. So they were losing a lot of opportunities for financing because the decision process took too long. The cycle time is the time from when the salesperson called to when the paper document was mailed out to the sales rep using FedEx. Now, we could say it's until they actually receive it, but we assume that with FedEx, it's going to get there by noon the next day. So we've still got predictability. Once it's picked up by FedEx, we're pretty sure it's going to get there and it's going to get out to the customer, and the deal is hopefully going to get closed by the sales rep. Review that, look at the Ask Dan column, look at how we consolidated positions, we created a new computer capability for this deal structure, and we were able to reduce cycle time. On slide 15, you see the general decision process model that's described in the textbook. It's the same picture. Basically, all the slide shows is that we use different types of DSS in different stages in the decision process model. If we're trying to compare alternatives, we might use a model-driven DSS. If we're collecting information about performance, we might use data-driven. To actually go through all these steps, there are a number of them that we don't computerize generally. Deciding who should decide, we don't computerize that, and that's set when we put the process together, so we don't keep making that decision. Implementation. We may have computerized systems to help with implementation, but it's usually not related to decision support. A big part of computerized decision support is to improve the quality of decision making, enhance the effectiveness of decision making in the organization. That means we need to know what a good decision is. So I suggest in the chapter that good decisions resolve the problem in a favorable way to our company, whether it's a positive outcome or not. Sometimes the best we can do is minimize our losses. So every decision we make will not lead to positive outcomes, but we want to resolve it in a way that's favorable to our company. And one thing we know is that even with computerized decision support, we're not always going to make the right decision. Keep in mind that with computerized decision support, we're trying to improve the batting average for these recurring decisions. We want more of them to be correct. If we're making credit decisions on financing for computers, we want more of those loans to actually get paid off. We want to reduce the number of loans that go into default. If we're making decisions about returns of products at Walmart, we want to reduce the fraud rate. So we just want to improve the quality of the decision making using computerized decision support. To define success, I think we have to both look at the quality of the decision that we make and then at how well we've implemented it. Because we can have a failed decision for both reasons. Poor quality process and poor quality decision can lead to failure. And then a great quality decision that's been implemented poorly also leads to failure. And sometimes a suboptimal decision that's implemented really well turns out okay. So we need to realize that both dynamics go there. The computerized decision support is only helping us with decision quality. It doesn't help with decision implementation. So even if we've got a great computerized decision support system and we've made the right choice, if it doesn't get implemented well, it may still be a failed decision through no fault of the computerized decision support or the decision maker, other than we didn't anticipate that implementation was going to be a problem. Well, there are a lot of impediments to decision success, and the chapter goes over them more than I want to spend the time to do here. But one is that we have a lot of traditions for how we make decisions, and we have a lot of biases that influence our decision making. And that sometimes keeps us from building computerized decision support because we haven't done it that way. Sometimes it's because of a lack of knowledge, and computerized decision support can help with that, whether it's document-driven or data-driven or a forecast from a model. Lack of knowledge is something we can address in computerized decision support. The last one that I mention on slide number 18 is that decision success can be hindered by a bad decision aid or decision support system. If the decision support system is giving us bad information, that's worse than not having one. So we want to make sure that if we build it, that the recommendations, the information that comes from the system is actually going to help. So if you do a special study and the calculations are wrong, that doesn't help the decision maker. If you make a forecast and you give a point estimate and you say that we're going to sell 5,000 units and you don't give the manager any idea of how uncertain that forecast is, and they just blindly accept 5,000 units, you may have a lot of excess inventory, or you might run out because you haven't given the manager enough information in your model-driven decision support system. So this is not easy. A big choice we have to make when we look at a decision process is how much do we want to change? How much do we want to change? Hammer and Champy talk about re-engineering. The bad news about re-engineering is it disrupts organizations and it scares people. Managers like to be decision makers. They don't like the thought of decision automation, and people don't like the thought of reducing the number of decision makers. So re-engineering is always going to be traumatic in an organization. It's much easier to think about redesign, enhancing the quality, enhancing the process, improving the cycle time, reducing the number of poor decisions. It's much easier to sell that to managers than re-engineering the process and reducing the number of people involved in the decision or the skill level of the people involved. Managers don't want their jobs de-skilled. We always have to think about that, look at the trade-offs, and hopefully more senior people, the sponsor of the project, is going to help us make those choices. A couple of quick things for you to put in your notes. Re-engineering is radical change. Redesign is incremental change. Both re-engineering and redesign can impact performance. Supposedly, re-engineering has a bigger impact. Because it's more radical, we expect a more radical improvement, a five-fold improvement in cycle time. I don't know that that has to hold true. I think redesign can give us large performance enhancements. And then business process reengineering has some characteristics, and they're listed in more detail in the book. But we tend to go to simple processes, more pushing the decisions down to the lowest level in the organization, and a heavy focus on the results of the decision process. So keep in mind that if we're going to do business process reengineering, we want to strive for some other changes as part of that reengineering and not just introducing technology. Neither redesign or reengineering is all about technology. It's about improving decision processes. And sometimes simplifying is the best way to do that. No computerization or very little computerization may actually improve the decision process. So we don't always need to re-engineer. We can make incremental improvements using technology and decision support systems. We take some part of the process. We build a better computerized decision support capability. If we want to redesign the process, we start by defining the business decision process. But that's what we do for re-engineering too. It all begins with a description of the as-is system. It all begins with a description of the as-is system. And I recommend flowcharting. Use a flowcharting tool or even use something like Microsoft Excel and develop the flowchart. DSS should help managers obtain enough information to make a high-quality decision. And you want to keep that in mind as you move away from description to prescription. And that's what we do. The system design is prescription. Looking at the decision process is description. Well, some design issues. I'm not going to spend much time on these. First is, certain types of data are very hard to include in a decision support system. Judgment, soft data, qualitative data. We're doing more of that with documents, but then you have to read it. We may do that with getting preference data and putting it into some models. But that kind of data is hard for managers to get a hold on, and it's hard to collect, and it's hard to process in a computerized decision support system. A big concern is that using computerized decision support systems enhances the confidence of managers that they've made the right decision. That's good and bad. If you're confident you've made the right decision, you're going to implement it more aggressively. The bad thing is if the decision support system is not good, then you're going to make that bad decision and implement it confidently. So because we know that using computerized decision support is going to enhance confidence, we need to be extra careful to make sure that we've built a good decision support system. Also, our system should reinforce the positive values that an organization wants. Like, we don't cheat. We take into account these issues. We make value-based decisions. Decision support systems should reinforce the good tendencies of the decision maker and not the risky or bad tendencies of the manager. A decision support system should not encourage risk taking, it should encourage rational decision making. Take risk into account as a rational part of your decision. And the last point there is focus on making rational decisions rather than rationalizing. What happens is that sometimes managers will make their decision and then they'll use the decision support system to explain it to others. Basically, they will put in the information in the decision support system that's needed to come out with the decision that they want to make anyhow. They bias their use of the decision support system. There's not a thing in the world that we can do to keep that from happening other than training managers to use the decision support system before they've made the decision. If you've already made a decision as a manager, and then you go and use the decision support system, it's an act of rationalizing. because it's going to be real hard for you to change your mind. Well, I want to finish up with just three conclusions. Computerized decision support systems can improve the batting average for recurring decisions. We can get more credit decisions that turn out well. We can improve the quality of our decisions in terms of sending trucks and scheduling trucks. Whatever it is, we can get a higher frequency of good or successful decisions if we've got good computerized decision support. The evidence is pretty clear that we can improve the frequency of successful decisions. We need to be very cautious in our DSS design and make sure that we don't do things to bias or encourage rationalizing or provide overload or actually facilitate making decisions that are worse than what the unaided decision maker would make. We take on a big responsibility when we build a computerized decision support system. The chapter ends with some fears going all the way back to the late 1960s that managers have about automating decisions. That if we have numerical objectives, that we've lost a lot of the richness of a situation. What we found is that over time we have automated more decisions. But the world is more complex now than it was in 1969. And if we want to keep this planet functioning and keep large global multinationals working, we need more computerized decision support and more decision automation, not less. Decision automation will not replace managers. Decision automation will never make all the decisions in an organization. The reality as I see it is that we need more and better computerized decision support systems in organizations. Thank you much for listening, and I'll stop this, and we got Donna on.